Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift. This episode of The Media Twits is brought to you by CUNY Graduate School of Journalism, offering an intensive, cutting-edge, three-semester Master of Arts in Journalism and a unique one-semester Advanced Certificate in Entrepreneurial Journalism, and CUNY JCamp, a series of continuing professional development workshops focused on emerging trends and skill sets in the industry. Learn more at journalism.cuny.edu.
Along with Rafat Ali, who is now an entrepreneur, former paid content, and Amazon fanboy, this is our special Amazon show, so you should be like a kid in the candy store.
I am indeed. Well, I guess I can buy whatever I want from the candy store, which in this case happens to be Amazon. I am a big fanboy, and fanboy from a user perspective, not from from a business perspective, it's a whole different thing. But from I live on Amazon. I buy everything from Amazon. I read Amazon every day, of course, through Kindle.
And when did it all start? Is this something that's gone back to the early days of the company, or was there a moment where you just realized it just kind of happened slowly over time? For me, I mean, I'm similar. I also buy a lot through Amazon. I mean, electronics and, you know, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I think it happened when they started the Prime. When I jumped into the Prime membership, I'm forgetting exactly when they started the Prime offer, Amazon Prime, which is their $75 a year free shipping for everything on the site.
Right, $79, yeah.
$79, everything that's eligible for Prime, which is a lot of stuff, is eligible for it. So from then on, I think it was just a no-brainer. And I remember, this is a very specific kind of a silly moment, but I became a fan of those touchless trash cans, the ones that you wave your hand over and they open up. And offline, they were selling for I don't remember now, but like, I don't know, $90 in a store. But on Amazon, it was selling for $70. And I said, well, I'm going to get a Prime membership. I'm going to get $20 off, and right out of the gate, for out of $75, I'm going to recover the $20. So that was the equation that I started. I think this was like 4 years ago. And from then on, I became a huge fan.
So for you, a lot of it, and I know for me, a lot of it is, you know, they're going to beat most people on the price. They've got the convenience of just, you know, you're buying everything on a computer, on your phone, you know, wherever you are. It's easy to do. When you have a Kindle, you know, all you need to do is push a button to buy something. So it's really about simplicity. You know, they've really got it down. The one-click thing is just so perfect.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's amazing how much of impulse buy happens because of that one-click thing, especially on the book side. Anything below $20 kind of stuff.
Yeah,
at least for me.
Yeah, it's so easy to make those impulse purchases because, you know, especially with ebooks, because it's just it's not taking up any physical space really, and it's just easy, and it's there, and what it downloads in a couple minutes and you've got it. So it's just you know, it's that impulse buy.
And it's also guilt free because you're not seeing the book sitting in your house and worrying about, oh, you have to read them. It's there. It's just when you get to it, you get to it. So
that's true. Yeah.
And I'm very excited about the Kindle Fire. I've already bought 5 Kindles before. This is going to be my 6th Kindle.
Wow. Do you have like a Kindle like display case or something like that?
Well, no. If I did have it, would probably be most of them are broken or stolen, but yes. So the reason I have the 5th Kindle is because the previous 4, 2 of them I lost, 2 of them I broke.
All right,
so I'm excited about the show today.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about, you know, we've done this special on Media Shift. This whole series called Beyond the Book this week, and you know, we've looked at what the big changes that are happening in the book industry. And you know they're really being hit hard by change, the rise of ebooks, you know, the influence of Amazon, the way that self-publishing now is becoming a big deal. It's becoming so easy for people to self-publish their book and kind of every step along the way, do it themselves and kind of get around the publishers. So that's been the big topic this week, and we decided that for our podcast, we would just focus on Amazon, because it's such an influential player in the book industry. And we'll just talk mainly about the book side of it, and ebooks and Kindles. And so we have a great lineup of people to talk about it. And we'll talk about, you know, the great things that Amazon has done, the innovations, you know, the convenience, and we'll also talk about some of the downsides of Amazon, the way that they've kind of gotten out of paying taxes, and that's a little controversial, and also some of the conditions at one of their factories. There was a big investigative report about that. So we'll talk about the good and the bad for Amazon. So our guests on today's podcast are Laura Hazard Owen, joined Paid Content as a staff writer in May 2011. She covers topics including book publishing, daily deals, and e-commerce. She's previously editor of Publishing Trends and a website and newsletter for the book publishing industry. We also have James Altucher, who built and sold three businesses and probably failed at 16 others. He's written five books with traditional publishers and two self-published books, including the latest, I Was Blind, But Now I See. He's an angel investor and writes for the Wall Street Journal and several other publications, including his favorite, which is jamesaltucher.com. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having me on here. This is James.
So the first thing we'll talk about is Amazon as far as e-readers and e-book sales. They have done, you know, fantastically well, with basically the leading e-book reader. The Kindle, they've sold, the International Business Times says that they've sold more than 17 million Kindles are out in, you know, in the marketplace before the Kindle Fire. Now they've announced this Kindle Fire tablet, and JP Morgan says that they're estimating that they'll sell 5 million of them in the fourth quarter. Possibly selling 50,000 to 60,000 every day. But recently, Amazon didn't do as well in its earnings and fell short because its expenses were up, possibly because it had to deal with so many sales of the Kindle Fire. What's your take, Laura, as far as Amazon goes and how they're doing on the e-reader front? Is this thing with their earnings, is that something to worry about, or is it just kind of a short-term blip?
Hi. So, well, Amazon has always, Jeff Bezos has always said that Amazon thinks in the long term, sometimes the very long term, about their products. And I would say that they're probably not worried about the earnings that we saw in the most recent report. It's believed that they are subsidizing the cost of the Kindle Fire, maybe by, you know, $30, maybe by $70. In order to keep it at $199, Amazon's actually taking a hit on the devices sold. But I think Amazon believes that it's going to make up whatever it's lost on the device in content sales and you know, really sees this Kindle as sort of a lifetime product and with a long-term outlook is kind of what they're saying in their most recent investor call.
And what do you guys use as far as are you both big e-reader users and e-books? Are you both? I mean, do you still read print books? Do you a mix? Where are you on that?
Well, this is James. I use both. I use the Kindle and you know, regular paperbacks or hardbacks. But I do a lot of traveling or even commuting into the city. It's just much more convenient to not carry three books with you when you can carry a Kindle. Or an iPad with a Kindle app. And, you know, I think it was a pretty quick transition from, oh, no, I need my paper, I need the feel of the page, to I can't survive without my Kindle. So, and I think most people are getting to that latter stage.
What about you, Laura?
Yeah, so at this point, my household has one Nook, one Kobo, and one Kindle e-reader. That said, I would still say that I probably mostly read print books, and sort of use the e-reader as something that I bring along when I travel. I also use it to read sort of long-form journalism downloaded from the web lots of times, and just use it as a way to carry a bunch of articles at once. So, you know, it's changed my reading habits, but I read a lot before, and I still read a lot of print books now.
And you have all the devices. I mean, what do you think about the Kindle versus the other readers? Do you see the advantages of it, or is it just the convenience and just the fact that they have so many books and such a big inventory that makes it such a game changer?
The inventory is definitely part of it. I think that the Kindle as a device, especially the new one, the $79 ad-supported one that just came out, it's, you know, it's a really good device. The Kobo that came out this May, it has a touchscreen, but it's very buggy. You know, the Nook has a smooth reading experience, but the Kindle is kind of just sort of the most intuitive, and it's very easy to use. So honestly, I'd say it's probably my favorite of the three.
James, this is Rafa's question for you. So you have had a bunch of books published before, and now you are more keen on self-publishing. Is when you made that choice, why did you make that choice, and sort of what your experience has been, and sort of the larger lessons for authors going ahead?
Well, let's look at what authors give you. So if you go the traditional route as opposed to the self-publishing route, publishers give you some sort of credibility. Somebody else liked him, so maybe he's good. I'm going to buy the book. But I think all three of these reasons why one and also publishers supposedly give you some editing. So they fix your grammar mistakes. They give you advice. You know, it's the classic Maxwell Perkins, Ernest Hemingway model from the 1940s. But all four of these things have changed in the past decade. For one thing, advances have quickly gone to zero in almost every category. Unless you're like a best-selling author, you know, fiction or nonfiction, you're just not going to get a good advance. And by good advance, it's going to be, you know, somewhere between four and five figures, which is nothing to sneeze at, but it's not going to be these million-dollar advances people were getting a decade ago for a first novel or a first book or whatever. Second, editors do not do any marketing at all. Publishers do not do any marketing at all. They claim to do marketing, but they don't. I'll give you a quick example. One of my publishers bragged to a friend of mine that they got me a review in the Financial Times. So that was great and everything. They forgot to tell this friend of mine that I wrote my own review in the Financial Times as a joke. I had a column in the Financial Times and wrote my own review. So, you know, and there was a couple of other examples like that. They said they got me an excerpt in thestreet.com. Thestreet.com bought my last company. I put my own excerpt in there. So it was ridiculous what they claimed they were doing for marketing, and they ended up doing nothing. Finally, my manuscript was filled with grammar mistakes because I'm horrible at grammar, and no publishers hire real editors anymore. And in terms of credibility, I just don't know if that's true. Snooki's getting published, so why can't I get published? You know, I don't think publishers have any kind of patent on credibility anymore. And it's now just more, what is your platform in terms of social media, and let the populace tell you if you're credible or not. You know, and let the Amazon rankings tell you whether you're credible or not.
Laura, do you want to jump in and talk about what the publishers still have? I mean, there's still a lot of authors that are clamoring to be published by publishing houses. I mean, how are they going to stand out now that you know, there's so many authors kind of going around them?
Sure, yeah. So I think publishers still perform a really important role. I say that partly because almost all of the books I read are published by, you know, traditional book publishers. You know, like it or not, that is, I think that is where most, you know, most of the best writers of, you know, our time and in this century, in the last century, are going with traditional publishers. It's not to say that some people that, you know, that they don't, that self-published authors aren't good writers, that they don't know what they're doing. But you know, I certainly think that publishers have been around for a long time, and they're publishing quality books, and there's a lot of great editors there, and there's a lot of, you know, smart people working in marketing. You know, they kind of get a bad rap these days, but
yeah, but a lot of, I mean, print newspapers have been around for hundreds of years too, and they have a lot of smart people working there, but that's not going to necessarily mean they'll survive. I mean, what is it about the publishers that's going to give them survivability outside of, hey, we've been here forever, we should be here forever?
Yeah, and just to add to that, Mark, when I self-publish, and I've done 7 books now, 2 I've self-published. When I self-publish, all I have to do is upload a PDF file to Amazon, and it's basically published. I don't have to wait a year for a publisher to publish me. So, you know, particularly with bookstores going out of business now, which used to be the reason why publishers would get stuff in their catalog and there would be this lag time, now there's no lag time. So I'm really not sure what the publishers offer as opposed to Amazon.
Well, but then, James, this is Raphael again. Would you have had success with your self-published books, or would you have had the breakout if you hadn't had 5 previous published books before? I mean, sort of your reputation, you were able to do that now because you have a previous reputation.
I don't know if that's true. I mean, I think my reputation came more from having a million regular users on StockPicker, and then I've had 3 million visitors to my blog over the past year. My Twitter following is multiplied by about 1,000%, and similar with Google+. So in general, my own self-created platform did a lot more for me than any publisher did.
I would take a little bit of a different tack here, and just also say that I think that self-publishing requires a great deal of time and effort on the part of the author. Lots of work, lots of outside work. Some authors are still looking for somebody to do a lot of that work for them. You know, let's take some of my favorite writers, maybe Alice Munro, one of my favorite authors. She's older. She's been writing for a long time. I don't think you can argue that every author is going to want to do all that work for themselves. I think publishers do perform an important intermediary role for the authors who want it. Doesn't mean everybody has to want it, but
I agree with that. But where the publishers are messing up is that they can take someone like Alice Munro and publish her with a 1 week lag time rather than a 1 year lag time. I think they're doing her a disservice now, and they're going to start to realize this, that there's a hole now. There's an opportunity for publishers to come out and say to Alice Munro, we'll give you the same advance and we'll publish you with 1 week lag time instead of 1 year. So
let's get this back to the Amazon subject. James, you've used their service for self-publishing. Tell us about why you decided to use them, and was there an advantage to them versus other self-publishing platforms?
Well, I thought about – so there's CreateSpace is what's owned by Amazon. There's also Lulu.com is kind of the most well-known self-publishing platform outside of Amazon and CreateSpace. And I thought about using Lulu. I called both. CreateSpace returned my call within 3 seconds, and Lulu never returned my phone call. So that made the decision pretty clear. Then what I did was, particularly for my last book, I got one guy to do the formatting and cover design, and he downloaded a Microsoft Word template from CreateSpace and formatted everything perfectly, plus he fixed all the grammar. His total cost, $1,000. I uploaded the final version to CreateSpace. Then that was free, and it's available right away on Amazon on paperback form. And then for $70, they'll format it for Kindle for you, and within about 3 weeks, it's available on Amazon in Kindle. So it was just a great experience. I have no real complaints, and anytime you hit the button, call me, you get a call within 3 seconds.
About Amazon becoming more of a book publisher now. There was a story in the New York Times. I mean, I think a lot of people kind of saw that coming. But now it kind of puts publishers, I mean, depending on where Amazon's going to go with this, you know, it kind of puts publishers in a very bizarre position of having to compete with Amazon, which is a very big partner of theirs, doesn't it?
So I guess there's a couple of different parts of Amazon being a publisher. One is enabling this, you know, very extensive self-publishing platform, like the one that James is using. And then the other part of it is Amazon actually acting as a, you know, a semi-traditional publisher where it acquires books, publishes the books themselves, and you know, sells them. And Amazon is the publisher, not the author. Right. Amazon has 6 imprints right now. I'll be actually writing a little bit more about this in an article next week, trying to sort of look at their sort of, you know, call it their professional publishing program, their traditional publishing program, whatever it is. 6 imprints right now. Larry Kirschbaum's big, you know, much, much ballyhooed imprint on the way, number 7. You know, Amazon has already published over 100 books under its own imprints. It has lots more planned. So I think that's interesting because in this, Amazon is competing with traditional publishers, but this is also, I think, where some of its problems with getting its books into bookstores, its sort of antagonistic relationships with booksellers may be problematic for it, especially these big books like the kind that Larry Kirschbaum is signing up, you know, Tim Ferriss, Penny Marshall, the Laverne and Shirley star, whose book they signed up a couple weeks ago. Amazon's going to have some good relationships with bookstores if it wants bookstores to carry their books. And right now, Barnes & Noble, you know, is saying they're not going to carry any books that they don't also have the ebooks of. So if Amazon won't sell one of its books as a Nook book, Barnes & Noble is saying they won't carry that book in print form in their stores. And, you know, a lot of people still find books in bookstores. They still buy books in bookstores and they go there to browse. I'm not sure Amazon can completely sort of just change that business around immediately. You know, there's still, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Amazon's going to beat out all the publishers quickly here.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, we were going to have a bookstore owner on the show to talk about his own experience, but, you know, they have, you know, so many smaller independent bookstores have had problems surviving because of the convenience of Amazon. And so it is a little bit ironic that Amazon is now kind of turning around and saying, hey, would you carry our books, you know, that we're publishing under our imprints?
Right. And, you know, Amazon has not really traditionally reached out to those bookstores. And I think in the case of these books, it's sort of going to have to, unless it doesn't care about having its books in as many places as possible. If it's primarily going to just focus on selling them through Amazon, you know, I guess that's a strategy that they may be focusing on.
Why didn't iBooks, the Apple thing, create a dent in Amazon's business?
Oh, so, you know, I think one reason is that people do like reading on e-readers. They like Amazon's platform. They may not be reading as many long books on the iPad. They may not see that as a really, you know, convenient or easy platform for them to read on. Why hasn't the iBook store done better? You know, I'm not sure that Apple is directing a lot of its resources into the iBook store. I don't know if the iBook store is a big focus for Apple right now. I would love to see Apple do more with the iBook store. And, you know, I think that they are starting to make more deals with publishers, do some more stuff with books on iTunes. I'm not sure it's been a big part of their focus up till now. Maybe that's changing a little bit, and Amazon's, you know, really going ahead with it hard.
I think also there's not a lot of inventory compared to Amazon's inventory. So when I'm looking for a book, I often can't find it on iBooks, but I can find it on my Kindle app.
Yeah, again, it's really building the inventory that gives them the advantage. I want to talk a little bit about some of the kind of negative perceptions that are out there about Amazon. there been, you know, there's a battle going on in California where I live over sales taxes, and they tried to back a proposition that would kind of, you know, make sure that they didn't have to worry about paying customers paying sales taxes, and that's something that California has fought, and they're fighting, I believe, in multiple states. They also had this investigative report in Lehigh Valley, Pennsylvania, where they have a factory, and this last summer there were people passing out, and they were, had an ambulance parked outside to take people to the hospital because the working conditions were so poor. Amazon has responded by putting in an air conditioner, and supposedly the conditions there are better. But there have been some serious PR issues for Amazon. How do you think that they've handled it so far? Is it, do you think that's just something that every big company deals with, or do you think it's just something that that might be a problem for them?
Well, just from my own experience, I've heard of none of those issues, so I didn't even know they had any PR issues, and I think I'm probably similar to 200 million other people. Like, I don't really follow the news on Amazon that much.
With the, you know, with the taxes, Amazon has been saying they're waiting for a federal effort. Just that the U.S. government should make it the law, and just for all the states. I'm not sure that this sort of piecemeal state by state fighting in some states, but there are Amazon taxes in other states. You know, I'm not sure that's a great strategy, and I think they are getting a lot of bad press by fighting these taxes in these states. It sort of makes it look as if they're this, you know, big company that thinks it doesn't have to play by the rules. And, you know, I do think people should be paying taxes on these products. We do in New York. It's not that bad. And then as for the fulfillment centers, you know, Amazon is building out its fulfillment centers very fast, especially, you know, with the shipping for the Kindle Fire starting and everything that they're shipping through Amazon Prime. I think they're building 17 new fulfillment centers this year. And so those are going to be in the press more. They're going to be in more cities, so they're going to be getting more attention. You know, Amazon just needs to provide good working conditions in its fulfillment centers if it's not already doing that. I mean, I don't even see how you can debate that. It's a big company and it can afford it. So it's got to do it.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things they were saying in this article in the morning call about the conditions is that a lot of this is predicated on the fact that they are sending things out so quickly, and that, you know, there's a lot of pressure at these factories to get things fulfilled and get things sent out because we all expect to get things right away. And we're obviously paying very little. I mean, Rafat is saying that he's got Amazon Prime where you pay $79 and get all this free shipping. So obviously that's not, you know, we're not paying a lot for it, but that shouldn't come out as being, you know, poor working conditions for people in factories.
Absolutely. Yeah.
In terms of Kindle Fire, Laura, what are your hopes? I mean, they've already in their earnings calls, was it 2 days ago, they said their expectations have exceeded by millions more, something like that?
Yeah, that's, I mean, Amazon is like king of never actually providing a number of how many Kindles have sold, how many ebooks have sold. It always says these funny things like, you know, millions more than we'd have expected, or, you know, three times as many, you know, e-readers ordered now as this year last time.
Why is that? Why are they so secretive about the number sold? That seems kind of bizarre.
I don't know. I don't know.
I think that's like any company. That's like why doesn't Google really describe the split that they have with you know, their advertisers, or I mean, with the people they advertise on? Just every company is as private as possible when they're releasing these numbers.
Yeah, although Apple's a little more forthcoming. It will at least say, yeah, how many iPads have been sold in a period of time, which is something Amazon never does. I mean, I think I'm sure the numbers would look really, really impressive. Amazon, you know, gets crap from journalists like me. Why don't you release your numbers? But like, do people who are buying Kindles actually care about that? Like, I don't think so. I mean, Amazon's.
I think that's an important point, actually, that there's the stuff that the journalists care about, and then there's the actual realities of whether one should publish or self-publish, and how those realities are changing over the past 5 years and how they're going to change over the next 5 years. So the average person doesn't care at all about Amazon's earnings. Kindles are clearly, you know, everybody's got a Kindle app on their phone, or they've got a Kindle or something, and it's just the world is transforming. We don't know the exact numbers. The earnings might be bad one quarter, but they might be great the next quarter. Nobody cares. They're just, people want to self-publish the books that they've been lying around on their bookshelves, and they're ready to go and self-publish rather than go through the really annoying traditional publishing process, which is an extremely painful process.
But people also like, you know, being able to go to bookstores and browse and find books they're looking for, go to libraries, check books out. You know, I mean, I think it's easy to focus on all of the things that Amazon is doing really well. They are doing a lot of things very well, but not necessarily to say that Amazon's model should somehow circumvent all other publishing models, which people also like.
I agree with that. But, you know, Amazon and CreateSpace also say they will distribute, or they will attempt to distribute, to traditional bookstores. Now, I can tell you, most people who publish with a traditional publisher do not get their books in the bookstores. Barnes & Noble does not supply every book that's published. They supply 10,000 out of the million that are published each year. So, you know, and look, the traditional bookstore industry is in fact dying. Borders, the number two bookstore out there, was so badly out of business they had to liquidate, and their final liquidation sales were 90% off. So, I mean, that bookstore got destroyed, as many other bookstores got destroyed. And Barnes & Noble probably will eventually get destroyed, unfortunately.
But, you know, there's a ton of independent bookstores out there. I'm not sure that the conclusion we should jump to is they're struggling, so let's let Amazon come in and just do everything that they used to do. I mean, I think that there's absolutely a place for bricks and mortar stores where readers can go to discover books. And so, you know, I don't think that just because bookstores are in trouble means that Amazon is, you know, the overarching solution to everything.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift. Along with my co-host, Rafat Ali, we want to thank our special guests, Laura Hazard-Owen from Paid Content and James Altucher, as well as our sponsor, the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism, PBS and the Knight Foundation, for making this podcast possible. Be sure to stay in touch with all the news, polls, and events over at PBS Media Shift at pbs.org/mediashift and our sister site, Idea Lab, at pbs.org/idealab. We'll catch you next week.